And hello out there to all you Metsian folk. Happy closing day, and I do say that with some sarcasm. We wish the Mets were going on. But we thank you for joining us on the Metsian podcast this evening, and we're so thankful you do each and every week. If this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast places. And if we're not there, let us know, and we will put ourselves there. Without further ado, at the end of the 2021 season, there's a lot to discuss: the highs, the lows, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I always like to say. Before we welcome on our featured guest, let's go to the Brain Trust, and we're going to start in Brooklyn with Mike Lacolant. What's going on, Mike?
Hello, Sam. Hello, Mitchville. Here we go. You know, let's just talk Mets and life.
Exactly. We hope everybody's lives out there as well. The reality, but sometimes the Mets and reality are interchangeable. So without further ado, let's go up the highway, as I like to say, to Rich Sparago in Connecticut. What's going on, Rich?
Hey, Sam. You know, it's a circadian rhythm, isn't it? You know, this season played out. It's over. It's time for the off season and the rumors. And, you know, those of us who have been baseball fans a while, this is the way it works. And so it's an unfortunate end to the play of the season and the play on the field. But now it's time for what we all like to call the hot stove, whatever you like to call it, but another exciting phase. And so looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's a make-or-break offseason, and we're going to get into that. But before we do, I'd like to dive a little bit into 2021, both lament as well as relive. But let us welcome on our featured guest for the evening. It's her first time joining us, and we're so very happy that she is. She's a digital marketer from Alberta, Canada. She has a design business called Print by Stady. Creates custom art for movies and baseball players alike. And despite being born and raised in the Canadian prairies, she is an avid baseball fan and shares Mets-related art on Twitter and Instagram under the name MLB Illustrated. And some of you out there may be familiar with MLB Illustrated's work. Without further ado, Sadie, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you guys. This is just such a fun opportunity. I'm so excited to talk baseball. Since I'm from Canada, I don't get to have these kind of conversations a lot, so I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, let's dive right into it. First of all, we always like to say, you know, give us your shameless plug. So before we really dive deep, just let the audience know where they can find you, and also how did you come to be such an avid baseball fan in Alberta, Canada, and a Mets fan at that?
Thank you. Well, I guess to start off with my shameless plug, if you like looking at Mets-related art and designs, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram under the handle MLB Illustrated. And how I got to become a Mets fan. So I'm raised in Alberta, Canada, and baseball is honestly not really a thing. There's kind of two sports, and that's football and hockey, and nothing else really exists. But when I was in high school, I had two teachers that were huge baseball fans, a Mets fan and a Dodgers fan. And after school, they would always put the baseball games on and kind of open up their classrooms for kids to hang out in after school. And it was a really safe space. And, you know, if kids had tough experiences at home or whatever the need was, it was just a place that a lot of kids kind of came together. And baseball was kind of the sort of chaperone of that, and just always created a really positive energy. And so I became a huge baseball fan through that, and specifically fell in love with the Mets because I just love a good underdog story. And despite the highs and lows of being a Mets fan, I feel like, you know, it's some of the most passionate fans out there, and I just really fell in love with the team.
Oh, that's great. So what would you say that was, what year did you fall in love? What was the first time you really dove into a Mets team?
So I started watching baseball in 2014. And then, of course, you know, 2015 was a really exciting year. And so it translated to a lot of excitement when, you know, the other high school students and I were watching the games and, you know, learning about, like, Matt Harvey's antics and just all of the camaraderie and the player relationships and everything. It just was fun and exciting. It was, you know, obviously not only exciting for the sports element, but almost kind of that, like, reality TV show aspect where you got to kind of know the players and, you know, through social media, obviously that helps too.
Yeah, that's a great point. And really within 6 to 7 years of Mets fandom, choose any 6 to 7 years throughout the Mets history, they will give Mets, whatever new Mets fan there is, they will give them all the highs and lows within that 6 to 7 year period. So, you know, you've gotten it. So welcome. You know, I'm actually 2005, so I have about 9 years before you. So I'm going to go around the horn now, see if Mike has anything for you.
That I do. I have to take this on a more personal level. I'll tell you why. I've been interested in art and drawing ever since I was a young child. And, you know, unfortunately, life took me in a different course, and I never got the technical training that I always strive for. And, you know, a conversation like this, you know, speaking with you, Sadie, from Canada, here I am in Brooklyn, New York, you know, this couldn't have happened 25, 30 years ago. That's how much the world has changed. So I want to say to you, congratulations for being able, you know, so far to realize your dreams and aspirations through this platform we call social media in the modern world. And congratulations to you. Again, this is more on a personal level. I have millions of thought bubbles exploding over my head, but I just wanted to extend that congratulations as a fan from afar, you know, as somebody who always wanted to be involved in art and graphic design and things of that nature, but, you know, never quite pursued it to my satisfaction.
Well, thank you. That's extremely kind of you. I really appreciate it. But I feel like, you know, it's never too late to get started with art. I know that kind of society sort of makes it seem like it's not a valuable career path. And obviously it is kind of difficult to make it into a full-time job, but I think that shouldn't dissuade anyone from, you know, pursuing their passion, whether it's just something as a hobby on the side or something that looks more like their career path.
Well said.
Yeah, well said. You know, we've had a few artists on here lately, starting with Nick Davis, who produced and directed Once Upon a Time in Queens, and now you, Sadie. So I'm going to go to Rich to see what he's got.
Well, you know, mine also is a bit more of a statement, Sadie. I just find it fascinating that a lot of what you said, you know, you grew up in Canada, right? And you have a talent, a very strong talent, and you chose to apply it to baseball, which, as you said, is not as big of a thing in Canada as football and hockey. And then within that, you chose to apply to the New York Mets, and I get it. You know, you had a professor, you had a teacher who was a Mets fan, and I get that. But at the same time, I also think it's a stretch for you, and I applaud you for doing that, because it would have been very easy to take your talents to, and I think the vast majority of people would have taken the safer path, which is to go and do it in hockey. You know, you live in Canada, to take that great talent you have and do it in hockey, but you chose to do something different. So my statement is, good for you. Good for you to do what you wanted to do and follow your personal passion, as opposed to, you know, for lack of a better term, a societal norm, you know, where you are. And then my question is said a bit, you know, tongue-in-cheek, but in the 7 years that you've been a Mets fan, have you ever regretted your decision?
You know, I feel like there's been times where it's very difficult to be a Mets fan. And as you said, perhaps it might be easier to be a hockey fan. Not that my home team is the Edmonton Oilers, and not that they're, you know, exceptionally better or anything, but I think that kind of one of the things that makes like being a Mets fan special is that even when there are sort of challenges or things don't go as expected or things just are like really bad, at least there's kind of that collective pain where everyone just kind of understands the suffering and, you know, goes through it together. So I wouldn't say that I regretted it at any point, but I can't lie and say that it was easy all the time.
Amen to that one. Mike and I go back to the early 70s, and hasn't been easy that entire time, let alone the amount of time you've been a Mets fan.
Yeah, what's also interesting, you know, and I had to, I have to admit that I was ignorant to the geography, that I had to confirm exactly where in Canada Alberta is. And I see that it was, it's Western Canada. So the fact that you also gravitated towards an East Coast team is interesting to me, especially considering, so I guess like you say, baseball's not really big. Does that mean that the Expo, you know, the former Expos, if you know the history, as well as the Blue Jays, they're shown over there?
I mean, you can watch it, and I think, you know, you'll find walking around people wearing the Blue Jays hats, but I would say in Western Canada, it's definitely not as popular. And even growing up, like in elementary school, you don't really have kids like even learning how to play baseball. So before I started watching baseball in high school, I didn't know any of the rules. I had a vague idea that there was like, you know, four bases, including home plate. But I apart from that, you know, no one knows any more than that in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's really interesting, which it helps in your uniqueness, Sadie. So again, I have to echo Mike and Rich and applaud you for that uniqueness. So congratulations. And this year was, you got a lot of coverage because of a lot of players acknowledging your work. So I think that's where we will start with the 2021 Mets. If you want to start with what the year has been like for you, both personally as well as, you know, following the 2021 Mets.
Thank you. For me, I mean, unfortunately, the Mets season didn't exactly go as expected, but I guess personally, with getting to know some of the players, I feel like maybe I see it in more of a positive light because of that. I decided fairly shortly into the 2021 season to create the MLB Illustrated account and start sharing some art. And it was mainly, the reason was because I knew I was going to be moving to the United States, and I thought, you know, this is a perfect time to really start pursuing, you know, design work in kind of a sports field, because it was something I was really interested in. And I knew I would be, you know, moving to the U.S. and I would be closer to not only the Mets, but just sort of people who knew and talked about baseball in general. So that's kind of why I started it off, to try and get my foot in the door in the sports design field. And I really didn't expect too much out of it. I thought maybe, you know, I would be able to make some art that some people would like and enjoy, but I never expected that any players would actually have seen it. And I feel that kind of really helped motivate things, because as soon as I know, the first time that someone shared the art was Jonathan VR. And as soon as he did that, I'm like, okay, well, I really, you know, got to make sure that everything's up to like higher standards, so that, you know, I don't embarrass him or anyone else that sees it. Not that I thought anyone else would after that point, but it definitely was a great form of accountability for my designs.
Well, I like the way that you use it as a way to check yourself and continue to improve. So that's really great. You know, those. So who are some of your favorite players? I'm sure you're also going to gravitate towards some of the people that retweeted and shared your work. You know, and also it's interesting, because we're also talking about some players who might not be coming back So if you could talk about, you know, Stroman, Pilar, VR, and what their play meant for you this year.
Yeah, when you make that point about some of the players may not be here next year, it makes me sad to think especially about Stroman, because he's someone who his support just really meant a lot to me. He had liked some of my tweets when early on when I started, and then he's retweeted and replied to a lot of things that I've done, and it just really means so much to me. And I just really appreciate how he does that, not only for me, but a lot of other, you know, young artists and young athletes. I see him often, you know, shouting out different people on social media. And as someone who has a much, much, much smaller following, it really means a lot and helps out a lot. And through him, actually, I got connected with his, clothing company and his foundation, HDMH, and I offered to make some graphics for them as well. So, it, you know, not only was it nice to feel that kind of support, but hopefully it'll, you know, help career-wise as well with those kind of connections. And Taiwan Walker is another one who has just always been very supportive as well. And I see him liking a lot of my posts, and his wife as well liking the posts, and it makes me so happy to see that. So I must admit that, yeah, I am biased to the ones that have shown me love. I feel like, obviously, I love them a lot back. But in terms of other favorite players, I was really impressed with Tyler McGill. I know that after the All-Star break and kind of especially the latter games in the season, things weren't going as well as the beginning. But just, you know, for a rookie to come in and be that kind of confident on the mound was impressive. The bench mob, of course, really impressed me a lot at the beginning when we were in first place. And you also can't have a list of favorite Mets without including Jacob deGrom, of course. Watching him was just such a blessing this season, and really sad that he got injured.
Yeah, that's the bittersweet part of what we're going to talk about. You know, Jacob deGrom can be talked about in both the highs and the lows. So let's, you know, I like that you start with the positives, Sadie. So let's go around, and we're going to start with Rich. Let's start with the positives. What were some of the positives for you this year?
Well, some of the positives this year. Well, I'd have to say Pete Alonso, certainly, becoming the hitter that he is. You know, and his defensive progress at first base, I know he talked about saying that he would not want to be a DH, and I don't blame him. You know, he's become a guy who they said could never play the position on the major league level. Is certainly serviceable and arguably better than that at first base. And as a hitter, you know, going to right field more, becoming a better hitter, overall hitter. So I think you have to look at Pete. Brandon Nimmo continuing to get on base at the same clip and also becoming a very good defender in center field. In the outs above average statistic, he was, I don't have it in front of me, I think he was -5. For his career in center field, and he's now a positive defender. So that's an incredible turnaround. So look at Nimmo. You know, some of the other things, I know there's a lot more disappointment, as we know, but you look at some of the work in the bullpen. You know, I thought Edwin Diaz had a good year. I thought Trevor May, generally speaking, was good. Aaron Loop was a hell of a find. You know, I think when the Mets got him, we were thinking, okay, this situational lefty, coming to get lefties out, okay, great, you know, dime a dozen. This guy's not a dime a dozen. This guy's elite. So you have to look at Aaron Loop. McGill, you know, a guy who came out of nowhere, and, you know, and as Sadie said, sure, you know, he struggled down the end of the season, but you have to also recognize that he had thrown almost double the amount of innings he had thrown in his busiest season, so in his busiest workload. So I think McGill's a positive. That's how I see it. You know, just as those are the big ones as I see them. Stroman, I think, was fantastic. I think it's a shame the man had a 10-12 record. He fits so much better than that. But, you know, then again, we don't know if he's going to be back. So Stroman, I think, stepping into the ace role was very good. You have to like what you saw from Taiwan Walker until the second half of the season. But again, I think it was workload, and I think he's working into that. So there's reason to be positive about him. So those would be my positives. I'd say there were some, for sure. Probably on net, I could probably find more negatives. That's what we do as Met fans, right? but there were positives.
So generally, Rich, you'd say 2021 was a net negative, to coin a term from Mets history, right?
No question. Unquestionably. I think if you look at the underperformers, well, I think they've said it themselves. You know, they when you watch the postgame show, they say themselves that they collectively, especially offensively, underperformed. And these are their own words. And you know what? They're right. They did. And on the pitching side, you know, again, I don't want to take up too much of the time, but we all love Jake, and he is the best pitcher in baseball, no question. But are any of the three of you entirely confident he's going to be healthy the rest of his career? I'm not. I'm hopeful. I'm not confident. That's a big deal. I mean, you know, when you lose the best pitcher in baseball, doesn't pitch at all in the second half of the season, and he's 33, and you find out that there was a tear in the ligament, and you add in the fact he had Tommy John, I'm not feeling great about that. You know, so there's that. But I think on the whole, you know, offensively you could find a boatload of negatives on this team, and I think we have to talk about those as we go. Maybe not so much on the pitching staff, but there's a reason these guys didn't score a lot of runs. You know, the offense collectively underperformed, and it's an unfortunate reality.
You know, that it is, and, you know, I'm going to go to you next, Mike, and we will again start with the positives, but I do think, you know, since I started that way, we can tail over to the negatives by the end of your of what you have to say. But just to go here, before asking about the positives, I'm just looking at the schedule, and before either of you know, and Rich, you can chime in if you do, does the fact that Marlins suspended game that counted for April, does that literally, when I'm looking at Baseball Reference and where the Mets were on that particular day, does that knock the games behind up a half game because that suspended game was then counted for April 11th?
It is counted in the record books as April 11th, yes.
All right, because I'm looking at, like, places where the Mets had a chance to not lose first place or at least, you know, stay in the hunt. And I see that it's telling me that when they lost on Friday the 13th to the Dodgers, when they had a chance to, at the time, before that September game, go back in front of the Phillies for first place by a half game, but ended up losing the game, saying they're tied. So it confused me, but now I think that is what makes sense, which is crazy to think about it. But another thing that I wanted to point out on this schedule was that Marlins series where they lost 3 out of 4, and I think that right there was really, truly, you know, we dove a little bit into this, Rich, last week, but that really is another place that you could say, even though they were still in first place, that they lost first place because it's set up for that Phillies series, which just didn't go well. But Mike, positives, negatives?
Positives, negatives. Well, you know, with this record, 8 games under .500 is obviously more negative than positives. But I can't add much more than what's been said. You know, I'll echo what Sadie said insofar as the bench mob. I think that was the highlight of the season. I really do. You know, if it wasn't for them, this we'd be having a different conversation, put it that way. But Alonso is definitely a positive. You know, the only problem I have with Nimmo is his availability. Otherwise, when you have a leadoff batter who, you know, whose OPS is somewhere near 850, you know, that's a good thing. A 400 on-base percentage, that's a good thing, you know, and that's within the National League. It's pretty elite. So, you know, I hope he can get his health straightened out. Otherwise, you know, a lot of question marks. Insofar as a game here, a game there, I think it's funny that we broke even with the Braves, and we're 1 game under .500 against the Phillies. That's just the way, you know, this season fell off a cliff, I guess. Whereas at one point we had winning records.
What? just pointing out that today's game actually counts. So the Mets, today was the rubber match, and they lost. So it's actually 9-10 against the Braves.
All right, you know, same thing. 9-10, 10-9, 9-9, 10-10. It's the same thing. First half of the season, we had a winning record against these clubs. Second half, no, we didn't. You know, so the tail off was there. I'm not going to – no, you know me. I go back to the Pittsburgh home-and-home series. That was the start of the fall for me.
Yeah, you know, this team was never more than five up as I look through here. And at the end, when it looked like there could be some hope, they never got closer than three games back to the Braves back on September 4th and 5th. So, Sadie, the negatives, you know, if you want to highlight some things that we didn't talk about that need to be pointed out and addressed going into the offseason.
Yeah, I think you guys brought a lot of really great points and a lot of great player analyses as well. I think one thing for me that was just so painful personally was just the one-run losses, particularly when we were playing the Giants and the Dodgers, which obviously are extremely good teams. And, you know, there would be moments where we would sort of show hope that, you know, maybe we could pull through, and then we would lose by you know, 1 point. And I feel like that just to me was quite painful, as well as, you know, the losses to Pittsburgh, the Nationals, you know, teams where it seemed like, you know, we were kind of set up to win, set up to get a couple more games under our belt to either boost our lead or sort of regain the lead over the Phillies and the Braves. And it just, the Mets just couldn't pull through. And I think as a fan, it was pretty frustrating because at the beginning of the season, you know, when we had the bench mob, everyone was saying, oh, you know, as soon as we get Conforto back, as soon as we get McNeil back, all of these players, you know, will be even more elite, even our lead in first place will increase even more. And then it just sort of regressed and went the opposite direction.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about the history, and when I was just looking over the 2021 Mets, and you look at the second half, and Rich, of course, you talked about it last week, what their record was, Mike, you are the one who actually brought it up, but what their record was in the second half since a particular series, and it was just 1978, 79 type numbers. And Sadie, I'd like to read you something that comes from Greg Prince, of Faith and Fear in Flushing, one of our friends on the podcast here. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Metsian Podcast as we come close to 8:30. But this was from a book and quoted by him in 2012 when similar things about those one-run losses were going. And he brings up the quote comes from William Rizek. Excuse me, it's a hard name to read. The Amazing Mets, 1962 to 1969. The Mets got two runners on in the ninth, but couldn't get over the hump and went down to their 12th straight defeat. That was to be a Met pattern for their early years. They would get themselves into a seemingly hopeless position, only to rise up off the mat to stage a desperate rally, which invariably fell just short. In their 120 losses, the Mets brought the tying run to the plate in the last inning 56 times. 39 of their losses were by a single run. He concedes defeat almost daily, Robert Teague wrote of the Met fan, but only after the very last Met has been retired. So in these years that you have been a Met fan and hearing that, have you read up on the history? Have you learned a lot about what the fact that this is a recurring thing, you know, the thing you bring up about one-run losses has literally been happening since 1962?
Yes, that's a great quote. I am aware of it. You know, I wouldn't say I'm like an expert in Mets history. It's definitely something that is slightly more of a newer Mets fan and someone who, you know, never grew up around Mets fans, something that I've had to kind of, you know, make the effort to learn myself. But, you know, just kind of experiencing it now, it doesn't make it any less painful knowing the history, or perhaps makes it even more painful, but it just, I guess it, as a slightly newer Mets fan, just feels even more of a shock. And I'm sure I'll get to that point where when I've been a fan for, you know, many, many, many years, I'll come to expect it. And I don't know, maybe it'll be easier, but for right now, it's definitely a tough pill to swallow.
So, Sadie, I will start with you since we only have you till 8:45. When it comes, however you can bullet point this, when it comes to the offseason, when it comes to 2022, what do you want out of the Mets this offseason?
A lot of things running through my head. Well, I think first and foremost, whatever sort of offensive coaching staff or anything behind the scenes to kind of fix the offensive woes that we saw this season and just the drastic underperformance of so many players, I would love to see that changed. I mean, I am, like, familiar, of course, with the Wilpon era and all the sort of politics behind the scenes. Wouldn't say I'm an expert in it as well, but I think first and foremost for me, it's front office changes, getting some sort of consistent kind of coaching and training to try and avoid just the sheer amount of injuries that were had this season. And maybe on that note, a little bit more transparency with the injuries. Just hearing the news about JD Davis today and how, you know, he got the news that he's going in for surgery and wasn't aware that, you know, this was even a major issue, I think kind of points to maybe some issues with the medical staff, DeGrom as well. Obviously there is kind of a lot of speculation about exactly what injuries he had, and then, you know, some different opinions circulating around, and through his interview seemed pretty frustrated with the process. So I think that's something that needs to be changed. Because I think we have, you know, we have some great offensive players. I mean, Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor. I just think maybe with the right sort of coaching and training can have, you know, more stellar years next year and can really carry the team. I know there's a lot of talk about just kind of completely restructuring the core of the team and, you know, whether or not, you know, we're going to sign Javi Baez, get new players, how exactly that's going to look. I'm not sure. Obviously, as I mentioned, I am quite a huge fan of Stroman, so would love to see him around. I think he's a staple pitcher and has proved that, you know, even the fact that he didn't pitch in 2020, he can still be extremely consistent. And when he's allowed to go late innings in the game, you know, has been successful at that. So, I guess need a little bit of pitching reinforcement, but I think the offense and everything in the front office is kind of my main priorities for next year.
I love it. You know, you helped us lay the foundation for this chat, so I'll go to you first, Rich. Going off of what Sadie said and whatever else is in your head, you know, we talked a little bit about it last week, but let's dive again deep.
Well, you know, in terms of the priorities, I think I agree with what Sadie said. It all starts at the top. They have a very critical decision they have to make on the president of baseball operations, and that will be very closely followed by an equally critical decision on the general manager, and guess what? Followed by an equally critical decision on the field manager, whether it's Rojas or not, and then the coaching staff. I mean, this is a cascading of things that has to happen. And I'll argue that they've got to get them all right. And that is only step one. So step one is in, you know, arguably four or five parts. And then they have to address the roster on the field. So, you know, Sadie, to your point, I do agree that the training staff, why were there so many injuries? You know, why were there, was it the 60-game season last year, whatever it is, or is it training techniques, or as Zach Scott said, is it a shared responsibility and the players weren't doing what they're supposed to do, whatever the heck it was, figure that out as well. And then it comes to the roster on the field, you know, addressing that. So there's a lot of work to be done. And it obviously has to be done in a sequential fashion. And they've got to get going. I mean, you know, the GM meetings are in November. They're like the middle of November. And before that is the time when you have to indicate if you're going to QO somebody, right? You have to do that, I think, within 5 days of the end of the World Series. So that has to be done. And then, you know, let's throw in the fact that we don't know if everything's going to stop December 1st or not, because if there's not a new collective bargaining agreement, all player movements, all that stuff stops. And so it's dizzying when you think about it, all the stuff that has to happen. In a normal off season, it's a lot. In this off season, with a potential lockout, and a suspension of, you know, any kind of player movement, sure, you could work on your coaching staff, your manager and all that. But there is so much to be done here. But I do think you have to prioritize it. It has to be sequential. And I think you do a top-down approach.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I'm not even counting David Stearns. I'm really right now just counting the with the A's out, Billy Bean and Theo Epstein's completely a free agent. So it's going to be interesting whether or not we hear anything regarding those two over the next few days. So, Mike, same question, off season.
I'm in lockstep with everybody. For me, you know me, it has to start at the top and everything trickles down. And team building. You have to go back to 2015, even 14, 16. Go back, you know, 6 years, and look where we are today. We're having a conversation about Syndergaard and DeGrom and Conforto and Nimmo and Dominic Smith. You know, forget the dearly departed to this point, like Harvey and Wheeler and Ahmed Rosario or even Steven Matz. But here's the conversation we're having. Team building. You know, 6 years after 2015, this is the lot that were left over with from the previous administration prior to BBW and Sandy's back. That's why Steve Cohen needs to get this house in order, and then the GM, because they're ultimately going to, you know, decide who gets to be on this roster and who doesn't. And then it's up to players to perform. This lot obviously underperformed this season. Look at the way today ended. No runs, three hits. You know, that's a microcosm of the season right there. We mentioned 1962. You know, you can make a comparison between Frank Thomas and the season he had in 62 and the supporting cast around him in the lineup and make a comparison with Pete Alonso and the underperformers surrounding him in this season's lineup. It's almost similar. We spoke about the one-run games. There you go. So get this house in order and start drafting. And I guess I'm hinting around a rebuild because, as Rich mentioned, you know, Jacob DeGrom is the biggest variable we have now. You know, but we have to do more, a lot more. Look, if it wasn't for acquiring Javi Baez, this team only has one slugger above 500. At least Baez slugged over 500 as a Met, not so much with the Cubs. So a lot needs to be done. And, yeah, I'll just throw this out there, you know, with all the praise that we've been heaping Marcus Stroman's way. I mean, he's been a model of consistency, you know, but unfortunately he's caught up in this maelstrom of uncertainty surrounding this Mets organization from the front office on down.
That he is. And, you know, we may need a bigger transition, you know, an atom bomb of sorts when it comes to this franchise, instead of continuing to move the goalpost, to take a metaphor from another sport that happened today. Sadie, you know, everything that we just said, everything that we were just talking about, it's hard to even imagine they're going to be able to get much done. And interesting that even the qualifying offers have to get done before the collective bargaining agreement. But, like, it seems as if there's going to be a lot of stalemate until that gets done.
Yeah, I think Mets fans are in a bit of suspense right now. I feel it's just such a shame, like, when, you know, looking forward at the 2021 season, just with the kind of, you know, records that some players were having, hoping, you know, that Pete, with a normal amount of games in the season, could, you know, improve on his already stellar records, and having Lindor. It's just a shame that kind of we have to go back to this sort of building blocks and restarting everything when it seemed like there is already so much promise. But, you know, as we mentioned, just got to start from the top down and, you know, just do the work that needs to be done in order to get the Mets to a better position to the playoffs next year.
Exactly. So let me send it back your way. First of all, thank you so much, not only for the work you do, but for joining us this evening. And before you go, I want to give you yet another opportunity for a shameless plug.
Well, thank you so much. It was such a such an honor to be on the podcast. I really enjoyed it. I certainly learned a lot. And it was just a lot of fun. So thank you again. And if anyone listening wants to see more Mets art in the off season, you can check out my Instagram and Twitter. Search MLB Illustrated, or I can see if you go on the Metsian podcast pages. I'm tagged in some of the posts, so that's another easy way to find it. But yeah, thank you guys again so much. It was a lot of fun.
It was great having you. And before you go, first of all, I'd like to pass it around to my compadres, Rich.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Shady, for joining us. And if you don't mind, one quick question from me would be, because I'm so far removed from what you do, for someone who does what you do, what would be the ultimate end game? Like, would you like to do this officially affiliated with MLB or officially affiliated with a team? Where does this go? I really have no idea. If you can just shed light on what, in your world, would be the perfect outcome.
Thank you. I guess I don't have a particular outcome in mind. I mean, I would love to be able to work with players or with a team, whether that is, you know, working with the official Mets, you know, social media pages or their merchandise, or I know a lot of the players, they have kind of their own, you know, clothing lines and companies. And I am working right now actually with a company that does some of the gear for one of the Mets pitchers. I can't say just yet because it hasn't been finalized, but just working on some designs for this player's glove bags for 2022. And so, yeah, those kind of opportunities are things that really mean a lot to me. And I mean, I do still have my full-time job in digital marketing, and you know, if I could get to the point where I could get some sort of a full-time position, whether that's with the Mets or, you know, with a particular player, I would absolutely love that. But I feel just so thankful and blessed enough to just have these kind of smaller scale design opportunities, and, you know, we'll keep working hard and posting more art to try and get my name out there so I can have more of them hopefully in the future.
Thank you for sharing that, and we'll do our best to help you out. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Perfect. Mike?
I would just like to reiterate my congratulations on achieving these interpersonal and business relationships. I think you're an inspiration to your generation. As someone who has a 30-year-old in this planet, you know, again, congratulations, and I think you're an inspiration to many. Your originality, your inspiration, your drive is top-notch.
Well, thank you. That's extremely kind of you. And if I could inspire anyone to, you know, make art or do whatever their passion is, no matter kind of what society may say about, you know, the arts in that field, I would be extremely happy. So I really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
And thank you again, Sadie. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Take care. Let's go, Mets.
Bye-bye. Let's go, Mets.
So, Rich, I'm going to start with the fact, you know, what I said about the collective bargaining agreement, what you said about the collective bargaining agreement, but how do they get anything before that?
I don't know. I do know. I heard that today or very recently. I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal about it. And what they basically said was the teams will operate under the current agreement as if it's just going to continue. So in other words, the qualifying offer this year will be around 20 million because again, the CBA doesn't expire till 12/1. So if you have to make a qualifying offer, let's just say the World Series ends argumentatively October 30th. So you have to make your qualifying offer 5 days later. So it is what it's supposed to be this year in the natural progression. And that teams, from what I understand, will continue to operate as though on December 2nd, December 3rd, it's the same rules as they were before. Now, granted, there could be a total lockout. The rules could be entirely different if they reach a collective bargaining agreement before that. But my understanding is that teams will not stop until they have to stop if there's a lockout on December 1st. They will proceed as if nothing was going to change and then adjust to that change if and when it happens.
You know, that does make sense, and I can be fine with that. But, Mike, are you fine with Sandy making any decision, really, before – other than maybe whether Louis should stay or not. But at the same time, it's just like I just don't know. I mean, like, for one thing, I could see that nobody coming in would want to keep him, and so that'll make it easy for him, and especially with the way the last 2 years have gone, whether you think he's gotten a fair share or not, it speaks volumes. I think it was Ron Darling that said, you know, you don't want to lose another Francona like the Phillies did. There's plenty of examples like Joe Torre here of managers who found their fitting somewhere else. So, what say you? How do you think the entire thing should go?
Well, I'm going to stick to my guns. New owner, new standards, new methods of operation. Sandy, out with the old, in with the new. I can make the same accusation that I did with the Wilpons and said that the Mets are still suffering from inbred decisions until Sandy Alderson leaves. He's the connection to the old regime, the common denominator. I want him gone, not for any other reason other than been there, done that. Okay? He got us to a National League pennant. I give him that much. That's not my issue. Out with the old and with the new, fresh ideas, fresh blood. Get them in and get them in here quick. That's my position.
Rich, it doesn't sound like Sandy's going to be going anywhere for at least a year. But at the same time, I mean, okay. You have kind of been within the corporate entanglements, if you will, let's just say you have somewhat of, at the worst, a novice's idea of it. So the difference between what Sandy Alderson would have been doing as president versus the president of baseball operations, obviously it's pretty within the title, within the differences of between the titles. But how do you think you can best break down for somebody who's kind of an idiot like me?
You're not an idiot at all. But so as I see the differences, the president of the team would be responsible for virtually everything. Okay. So here's what I mean. Marketing stuff. Think about that. That's the person that comes to my mind. So when it comes to what the fan experience at Citi Field looks like, when it comes to what they sell, all that stuff, the entire experience of being a Met fan, whether it's their social media stuff, whether it's their marketing stuff, whether it's the way they present themselves to the outer world, that's what the president of the team would do. Be responsible for all of that with all of these folks feeding into him. So the marketing group would feed into Sandy, as would the business folks and all of that. It all feeds into Sandy, as would the player, the president of baseball operations. But it would be one function feeding into Sandy as opposed to the holistic view of the organization. So that's what I think about. I think about when it comes to – think about everything that we experience as Mets fans from you know, the broadcast, you know, certainly the Mets license, although SNY is owned by the Wilpons, the Mets have to approve of the broadcasters for SNY. They have to approve the approve of the broadcasters for CBS Radio. All of that stuff, the way the New York Mets appear to the outside world, and everything about a Mets experience is Sandy's, including but certainly not limited to the players on the field. So that's how the difference is as I would see it. And to your point about, you know, a year or so down the line, to me that's the only way they're going to attract a Theo Epstein would be to say, look, you come in as president of baseball operations, you know, get us going in the right direction in terms of on-the-field stuff. But then, you know, clearly from everything I've read about Theo Epstein, he wants a bigger hand than that. So, but then, you know, when Sandy steps away, a year, 2 years, 3 years, Theo could take that kind of a role. To me, that's the only way you could really entice this guy to come on board. But that's how I would see it, Sam. I would see it as, you know, from a business perspective, if you think about it, the president of a company might have research and development reporting in, and marketing reporting in, and sales reporting in, whereas the president of sales is just in that one silo, as would be the case for this current hire of president of baseball operations. That person would just oversee the baseball operation, where the president of the entire organization would oversee everything.
And if
so,
I may,
Mike,
Sam,
it really
I'd just like to pick up where Rich left off and bring in another local example, you know, in the Bronx. Brian Cashman doesn't make these decisions. Hal Steinbrenner doesn't make these decisions. Randy Levine, he's in charge of the outward impression that we perceive as the Yankees brand. Everything that Rich mentioned, that goes to Randy Levine, and we know he runs, you know, that Yankee empire with an iron fist. It's not so much Cashman. It's not so much Steinbrenner. It's Randy Levine, the president of baseball operations, and he's a very effective one, and when he needs to step into the fray, he does very forcefully and with great conviction. But otherwise, you rarely see him on the scene. Just one example.
Right.
And so, you know, the Mets, basically the Mets' plans became in shambles. So it's very well that Sandy Alderson, you know, especially at his age of, I believe it's about 72, 73 years old, is doing two jobs and, you know, the job of a much younger man, because they had wanted to hire a president of baseball operations and a GM. And all of a sudden, on top of everything that Rich just laid out that the president has to do, Sandy was probably also in charge of that and much more within the baseball ranks than he expected to be.
And that's why it's up to Steve Cohen to get this in order.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's basically, with close to 6 minutes left to the hour, a good place to leave it. It is within the within Steve Cohen's ranks. And Rich, I'm going to go to you as a season ticket holder, and everything that you just said in terms of the way the Mets are presented. So between, obviously not 2020, but 2019, between 2019 and 2021, what did you think the difference was in terms of the way the Mets were being presented to you as a season ticket holder?
Sadly, it wasn't a lot different. And again, you have to throw everything into the pot here. You know, a pandemic year in 2020, just you almost have to throw that out. Now, what they did in 2020, Solner to the Wilpons, of course, the way they handled it, where, you know, they kind of made it unattractive or difficult to want your money back. Like they basically put in, this kind of bothered me in 2020. When you got your emails about, okay, you know, we're not going to have fans in the stands and here are all your options. And at the very, very bottom in the finest of fine print, it said you can get your money back. But it was like, you could defer it. And if you defer it, we'll give you 10% bonus credit and all this kind of thing. And it was almost like you had to get a magnifying glass out to see that you had an option of getting a refund. So anyway, so there's that. And then coming into 2021, you know, under Cohen, this year, you know, the bonus credits were something that are a function of the pandemic. There wasn't anything really different as I could see it. You know, I don't see anything. I don't see any special, any extra perks coming the way the season ticket holder. The way the ballpark was run during the pandemic, I thought, frankly, you know, left a lot to be desired. I thought that, not to go down a rabbit hole here, but in the beginning of when they started letting fans back in, when they said you had to show, you know, a vaccination card, I thought the security around that was ridiculous. I could have shown them a vaccination card that said Santa Claus. They were barely even looking at it. And I get it. I don't want to task these people at the front gate with doing something that's very uncomfortable. But at the same time, if the state says this is what the rules are, you know, for gatherings, you have to find a way to, you know, bring people in who will do it. So I wasn't really impressed with that, but I don't know if that would have been different under the Wilpons. So short answer, Sam, to your question is really nothing that I've seen is different. It's only year one of Cohen. Let's give it a couple of years to see if he changes any policies, changes the experience, makes it more fan-friendly. I know he's soliciting these ideas. One of the things, and I'll get your opinions on this, that a lot of fans have said to him, no, not the ridiculous roof on Citi Field, which is silly. But the idea of starting home games at 6:40, that has been – the writers are all over that. Of course, you're thinking about their own selfish deadlines, of course, but – a lot of teams are now starting their home games, especially during, you know, April and May and September when the kids are in school. They're starting these games at 6:40. I think it's a freaking great idea. So let's see. Yeah. It's out there, right? The Yankees do it, and Cohen responded to somebody saying that, well, traffic, when people do that. I'm sorry, it's the same city, right? The Yankees do it. So come on. So let's see if they become more fan-friendly, if they maybe – do more focus groups, if they listen, if they change some things. But at this point, I haven't seen it.
Thank you for that. And, you know, it does seem like it's not just fodder for Steve Cohen that he's actually listening to what we have to say. And we're going to see whether, I guess, that's the case coming up. You know, we got a Queens baseball convention coming up this offseason. You know, like we said, you got the GM meetings, the winter meetings, the collective bargaining agreement, a lot of things to get to in baseball, the Mets, and otherwise. It's crazy. So before we go, guys, and Mike, I'll start with you. Is there anything left that we need to talk about?
No, just picking up where Rich left off, you know, insofar as Cohen. I think we're seeing that there's more to this than meets the eye. It takes a lot more than, you know, 10 months to audit an entire organization. So give Cohen time, you know, even right down to the tickets and advertising and community relations, everything. You know, in order to audit an entire organization from top to bottom, that takes a little time. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll give him a little bit of space. Insofar as applying normalcy, you know, to these pandemic standards or times, I'm willing to give it one more year. You know, last year was very uncommon. This year was still compromised. It was an adjustment. Next year will be better. But until they get that collective bargaining agreement signed, sealed, and delivered, I'm very untrustworthy and leery that both sides will reach an agreement, a timely agreement. And I think we have troubled waters ahead. That's it.
Yeah. You said it, brother. You know, troubled waters ahead. We'll see what's going on. Rich, I'll go to you. What? Anything left on the docket for you?
No, other than we've said this before, but I mean it, I really mean it this time, which is that this is the most, it perhaps could be the most important offseason in the history of this franchise. So you think about what's on the table. Where are they philosophically? Are they behind the scenes talking about an entire rebuild? I don't think they are, but maybe they are. And that might structure who they bring in. You know, maybe they might bring in a Pobo who has done a rebuild if that really is in Cohen's heart. If he's saying, no, you know, with the Yankees in town, I can't rebuild this team. I need somebody who's going to, you know, take what we have and make us better, make us competitive right away. That might structure who they go with as a president of baseball operations. So there's that. There's the collective bargaining agreement. Will there be a salary cap in baseball? Will there potentially be not a season in 2022, right? Because they could shut this game down. Will cooler heads prevail, which I hope they will, and they could say, look, coming out of a pandemic or kind of still in one, we can't shut this game down. We'd be killing ourselves, you know. So I don't know. There's so much going on from a Mets perspective, more macro around MLB. I think this is an incredibly important offseason all around the board.
All around the board, indeed. You have been listening to the Mets Game Podcast. We're so thankful that you do. Once more, we thank Sadie of MLB Illustrated for joining us. It's just a remarkable story. She does do great work with graphic design around the Mets and MLB and players. It's just fantastic work. So check it out, both Twitter and Instagram, at MLB Illustrated, everybody. And ladies and gentlemen, we have entered our final word. So first, I am going to go to Rich for yours.
I would say eager. I'm eager for this offseason to start. I never want a baseball season to end, but I know that this one had to end, so the work, the tons of work that have to be done can get started. So, okay, so I'm eager that to see what happens. Again, there's so much. I think the Mets are going to be all over the news all offseason, as will the collective bargaining agreement, as we talked about. But I think there's so much to do that I'm eager to get it started. So eager is my final word.
I like it. Mike, what is your final word?
I'm going to go off the grid, and I'm going to say perplexed. I'm perplexed. Look around baseball. Tampa Bay Rays, 100 wins. We know how they went about it. San Francisco Giants, when an organization high, a franchise high, 107 games, we know how they went about it. That's a Frankenstein team. They put that team together from spare parts throughout the league. We know how the Dodgers do it. They're analytically an intense ball club. 300-win seasons. And I'm just baffled, A, what is the winning formula? I just don't know. Analytics is the hockey stick and the spokes of baseball. I don't know if old-style baseball or analytics are advancing this game. I just don't know. I look at the standings. I look at the teams going to the playoffs, and I'm perplexed. And at the top of that list, you know, Tampa Bay, look what they did to the AL East again. It's amazing. It's amazing. In San Francisco, you know, they remind me, Rich, what was the team in the 80s, the Phillies, the Wheez Kids, right? Because they were all at least over 35 years old, if not pushing 40.
Yep,
it's amazing. You know, and I guess my point is, you know, this overemphasis on analytics is problematic, and I think it's going to take the reincarnation of John McGraw to come along, throw all that out the window, win a championship, and get other organizations to follow the leader, because I don't see the advancement, the major advancements, the legitimate or discernible advancements in baseball because of analytics. So, perplexed, Sam. That's my word of the day or the night, or my final word, as we say.
I'm going to go in this direction, just as a bookend for this season. I'm thankful. Thankful is my word, because we just watched 162 games. There were some great playoff races that, unfortunately, the Mets got themselves out of. But at the same time, you have to, after losing 162 games and only gaining 60 of those back, you have to be thankful. None of them were able to see in person. This one, I at least got to one. The Mets unfortunately lost. But so many people were able to see a pretty solid Citi Field home record of the 2021 Mets. They just, you know, completely fell apart overall record-wise in the second half and couldn't get the road record together ever. So that's the unfortunate story of the 2021 Mets. But thankfully, we got a chance to get the opportunity to watch them in person. And it was Steve Cohen's first year. And you could say that it went poorly. It did, but at least it's under his belt. At least he has his first year in organized sports after making all of his money on the stock market. So I'm thankful. I'm thankful we just got to watch a baseball season and that we had the opportunity to see it in person. And hopefully we can continue to weather the storm and be able to, not only from a collectively bargained area, we can also continue to be safe and healthy and watch baseball the way it's meant to be, which is in person at these ballparks all around the country and all around the world. So thank you. And thank you to our listeners. We had such a great 2021 with all of you. It was such an unbelievable year that really started with Howie Rose, and we were able to have Nick Davis on, and from Sadie onward to Greg Prince and everybody we've ever had, Anthony Rivera of Subway to Shea. I could go down the list right now, but it's almost kind of like an Oscar speech. I'm going to miss somebody. So thanks to all of our guests from 2021 season. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to our listeners. Thanks to Mike. Thanks to Rich. And, I always end with let's go Mets, but I'm going to have to pass it around one more time after that, I feel like. So Rich, you know, thank you.
Thank you, Sam. You know, you certainly drive this. You help get our guests almost exclusively, and you do a fantastic job with that. And it's because of that, yes, it's great to talk baseball with you guys, and I thoroughly enjoy it. And it's equally nice when we have a guest on, you know, from, like you mentioned, from Howie Rose to Sadie to Nick Davis and all this. You make this show go, and I'm thankful for you and Mike. And for the fact we have an opportunity to do this. And so very good perspective on that, because you're right. Last year we had a 60-game season with no fans in the stands, and it was downright weird. This year we had a, 85 to 90% normal season. The Red Sox had some COVID stuff. You know, they lost some players for a while. But generally speaking, it was pretty normal once we got past the capacity restrictions early in the season. So you're right. Good perspective. Thankful for this podcast. Thankful for all the work you do. And thankful that we had a great season.
Thank you for that. And Mike, thank you again.
And may I say thank you, guys. I look so very much talking baseball with you guys on a weekly basis, more or less, you know, every 7 to 10 days. You guys are my friends. I hold you dearly in my heart. And, I'm very appreciative to this time we spent together. And let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets indeed. Thank you to all of our listeners. Thanks again to Sadie of MLB Illustrated. I want to wish everybody a fantastic playoffs. Enjoy the baseball coming up. It's going to be fun starting with Yankees, Red Sox, wild card. What a fun time that is going to be for this city and that rivalry. And I think that we're looking forward to catching you sometime down the line when we figure out our off-season schedule. So within a week, we should have an episode, but only one way to leave it off. Let's go Mets. Thanks again, everybody. Take care. Good night. Thanks again, Sadie.
Everybody.
Good night, all.
Later, Mike. Later, Rich.